From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point.
And Smith, he fires deep, and that's going to be caught on the run by Kareem Hunt. Inside the 20, inside the 10, all the way for a Kansas City touchdown to tie the game.
That was Kareem Hunt's explosive gridiron debut for the Kansas City Chiefs last year. But last week, he was cut from the team after TMZ released a video of him beating a woman. The next day, Reuben Foster was arrested for domestic violence and cut from his team, the 49ers. 4 years after Ray Rice knocked out his then-fiancée, is the NFL still dropping the ball? This hour on Point, the NFL's domestic violence problem. Join us. What do you want the NFL to do with players literally caught on tape committing violence against women? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With me from New York is Kimberly Martin, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. Her story this week is titled, NFL Should Leave You Feeling Sick, after recent revelations involving Kareem Hunt, Reuben Foster. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Great to have you, Kimberly. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So walk me through the recent events with these NFL players. First, Reuben Foster, arrested on a domestic violence charge, released by the San Francisco 49ers. And then what happened?
Released. He has to go on waivers, which means that any of the 31 other teams can put in a claim for him. They could claim him as one of their own. The Washington Redskins were the only team to put in a waiver claim for him. That in itself was surprising. And then, so now he's a Washington Redskin. Now he's also on the commissioner's exempt list, which means that he cannot play in any games, but he's a member of the team. He gets paid. He cannot practice, but he can go to the facility. And he'll be on that list for a while until his court cases are resolved and until the league investigates.
So here is Kareem Hunt in an interview with ESPN's Lisa Salters on Sunday. He's apologizing for reacting violently toward a woman.
I'm asking for forgiveness, and I definitely believe I deserve forgiveness. And everything is really, you know, happening fast right now. And I just want everybody to, you know, forgive me. And I know it's going to be hard. I made a bad choice, and I'm not going to let this bring me down.
So we started with Reuben Foster. That was Kareem Hunt there. Kansas City Chiefs cut him 9 months after he shoved and kicked a woman. Tell me about that story, Kimberly.
Yeah, the video was released on Friday by TMZ. And like you said, the incident happened months ago, but this is the first time the public, this is the first time the NFL and the Kansas City Chiefs claim that they have seen the video. They're seeing it at the same time as the public. So we have an incident that happened months ago that now has come to light. And as a result, Kareem Hunt is no longer a Kansas City Chief. No other team, unlike Reuben Foster, no other team claimed him. Mm-hmm. So he's out of a job as of now, and the league says because of the new information, which is this video, mm-hmm. that they will have to, you know, further investigate, and then we'll see what happens with him.
Are you suggesting that if there had not been a video of Kareem Hunt attacking this woman, he'd still be on the Chiefs roster?
Oh, 100%. And I say that because the Chiefs, in their statement as far as explaining why they released him, they said Kareem was not truthful to us about the incident, what happened. So once their claim is once they saw the video, as we all did, mm-hmm. that's not the story they were given. So because he was not truthful, they had no other choice but to release him. I do think had he come clean in February or March, or told them when they first came to him and said, what's going on here? Had he said to them, so this is what happened. I shoved this girl. I kicked this girl. Now that's on the team to decide, okay, do we put him in treatment? Do we talk to him? They figure out a course of action. They can then determine whether they want to release him. But because the video was released without them having any knowledge of it, I think the Chiefs were in a tough spot. And they felt the PR damage that had been done was too great, mm-hmm. so they had to release him.
Of course, this is not a one-off problem. We've seen a long list of NFL players suspended or released or just had a slap on the wrist for incidents of domestic violence. You write, Kimberly, that these recent stories are, quote, proof of a larger, more insidious disease that has taken root in the way the NFL conducts its business. Would you expand on that?
Well, as I mentioned further down in the column, we've had it feels as though we're in 2014 again. And 2014 was the Ray Rice situation. I think we all, football fans are well aware of the video of Ray Rice sucker punching his then fiance at the time.
Unconscious.
In an elevator.
Yeah.
Yes. He knocked her out. He kind of dragged her out of an elevator. So that's where the NFL was then. And the NFL was criticized for its handling of the case, how fervently they investigated it, where, you know, the interviews that they're doing, where videos, could they get videos? You know, TMZ was also the website that released the Ray Rice mm-hmm. video as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think now in 2018, we're left to wonder exactly how is it that TMZ can obtain videos? Now, I know that we all know that they pay for videos, so, but an entity as big and as powerful as the NFL, with as many connections around the country, around the world, it just baffles me that the release of this TMZ video was all of a sudden new information,
and in fact,
the NFL.
Yeah. You write about this very distinctly. You say this is the same league that, quote, tortured us with its never-ending pursuit of Deflategate, including hiring a slew of attorneys, conducting interviews with dozens of people, producing a 139-page report. And to this point, Kimberly, the NFL has produced nothing in its investigation of Kareem Hunt or others since these events happened.
Yeah, and that's the troubling thing because, you know, I use the word torture torture us with Deflategate in my column because that was about deflated footballs, you know, and that they went through to exhaustive lengths to determine whether the Patriots, whether Tom Brady did in fact deflate footballs in a championship game. You know, not to say that is not important, but my biggest issue with the league is consistency. And when you talk about wanting to get to the bottom of events, when you want to get to find the truth in all these situations, whether domestic violence or not, you want to see a level of consistency. You mm-hmm. want to feel as though the league is being truthful, mm-hmm. that the league is doing everything in its power. And that is that's why I use the word hypocrisy in my column, because there are too many instances about where we've seen the punishments vary. You know, it seems arbitrary. One player gets one game suspension, another player gets six games. And you'd like to feel as though the league really has a handle on how it conducts its investigations.
Kimberly Martin, hold on for just a second. Let me bring in from Washington now Deborah Epstein, professor of law and co-director of the Georgetown Law Center's Domestic Violence Clinic. For 4 years, she headed the NFL Players Association Commission on Domestic Violence until she resigned in May. Her piece in the Washington Post about her resignation is titled, "I'm Done Helping the NFL Players Association Pay Lip Service to Domestic Violence Prevention." You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Deborah, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jane.
Deborah, why did you quit? Why did you leave the Commission on Domestic Violence at the NFL?
Well, when I was first asked to join the commission, when it first formed in the aftermath of the Ray Rice incident, I spoke to the executive director of the Players Association, DeMaurice Smith, and I asked him, is this about window dressing for the issue of domestic violence in the NFL, or is this commission going to be one that will be empowered to take meaningful action to eradicate the problem of violence against women in professional football? He assured me that it was the latter, that meaningful action would result from what the commissioners discussed. And in fact, I was there for 4 years, 3.5 years. During that time, along with a research psychologist, Dr. Lisa Goodman, I conducted a study where we met with many, many women who are the wives and girlfriends of NFL players to talk to them about what they believed could be done by the league and the Players Association to better support them and better protect them, to give them more options when domestic violence occurred. We wrote up that report. We had to sign a confidentiality agreement with the Players Association to do it. We turned it into them. It's more than 2 years now, and nothing has happened.
Mm. None of those recommendations have been implemented.
That's right. None of them have been implemented. The report has not been released. I can't release it, but the Players Association could, and the public could see the ideas that women themselves have, women who've experienced violence or have watched others who are close to them experience violence. They have concrete, easily implementable ideas about how to improve things in football. That report needs to be released and their recommendations need to be implemented.
Did you say you signed a confidentiality agreement?
I did. I signed a confidentiality agreement in order to get access to the wives and girlfriends of NFL players.
Mm-hmm. And so you're unable to talk about what you learned from those interviews from those wives of those players. Is that right?
That's right.
And so, well, however, you, when you stepped down, after you stepped down, you heard from a number of players, their wives, who told you about life inside the NFL. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I heard from a number of women who are wives of current and former players who told me things, for example, about some of the deeply gendered relationships, sort of traditional stereotype gendered relationships that women and men have in the NFL, where the man has the vast majority of the power. He's disproportionately the primary breadwinner. His career is the one that the family recognizes, where his individual success is paramount, and that that kind of setup really contributes to the likelihood of domestic violence.
We are discussing professional football players and domestic violence in the NFL. You can join the conversation this hour. What are you hearing here? Have all the recent headlines about player violence against women turned you off the game? Or do you compartmentalize it, consider it a separate issue? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about domestic violence in the National Football League this hour, and you can join the conversation. What should the NFL be doing to address domestic violence? Are you willing to let a star player on your team be cut, even if that means losing games? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Great panel today. Kimberly Martin, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, and Deborah Epstein, professor of law and co-director of the Georgetown Law Center's Domestic Violence Clinic. She resigned in May from the NFL Players Association Commission on Domestic Violence. Let me play these clips. September 2014, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell speaking at a news conference about the NFL's handling of the Ray Rice incident.
I got it wrong in the handling of the Ray Rice matter. And I'm sorry for that. I got it wrong on a number of levels, from the process that I led to the decision that I reached. But now I will get it right and do whatever is necessary to accomplish that.
And here he is in 2016, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell speaking with Gary Myers during the WFAN radio talk show Chalk Talk. Here's what Goodell had to say about domestic violence in the NFL.
We've learned a lot, but these are complex matters. And when you talk to the domestic violence experts, these are difficult matters to deal with. You have rights. You have families that you have to be concerned with here. You have privacy issues. And yes, you want to make sure that you're doing everything possible to address these when they happen, but you also want to deal with them to prevent them from happening. And so I think we've made tremendous progress. Can we make more, and will we make more? Of course.
So, Deborah Epstein, I want you to respond to what you heard there. Roger Goodell in 2014 saying, I got it wrong. I'll get this right. I'll do whatever it takes. 2 years later, he's saying, well, these are difficult matters. There are privacy issues here. And he said he thinks that the NFL has made tremendous progress. You resigned from the Commission on Domestic Violence at the NFL because you didn't think the NFL was doing enough. What are you hearing in what Roger Goodell is saying there?
I'm hearing a bunch of words, right? But the actions of the NFL absolutely belie those words. Just look at Dan Snyder, who applauded Goodell's statements when he made them back in 2014 and ever since. But in hiring Reuben Foster immediately after the 49ers fired him when he was arrested for assaulting his girlfriend for the third time in a year, Snyder is sending a really clear message to the players that Goodell is tolerating. As long as you have strong athletic potential, you will suffer no meaningful consequences for domestic violence. That's the message that the NFL is actually sending to professional athletes, as well as the high school and college players who are hoping to play eventually at the professional level. The message is violence against women is tolerated in this sport.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, what's your response to Goodell saying, you know, there are privacy issues here. And there are many behind him who say, you know, counseling should be the answer. That's the best way to deal with domestic violence. This is a matter that should be dealt with in families. What's the NFL doing in this in the first place, Deborah? What do you respond to that? How do you respond to that?
Yeah. These may be complex issues. We have learned how to deal with them as a society, and the NFL needs to catch up. They need to talk to the women. Look at our report. Those women are not saying counseling is what is needed and privacy is the ultimate goal here. They are not. They are saying reduction of violence is the ultimate goal here. They need to start paying attention to that. They need to adopt policies that send a clear message that engaging with violence against women will harm people's careers, players' careers in a meaningful way. And, you know, I think the next step, unfortunately, because we've tried to shame the NFL into taking meaningful action, and they have not, the next step really is going to have to be that fans are going to have to take action. All of us are going to have to translate our condemnation of the NFL into something that matters. We have to boycott teams who fail to meet basic standards of human decency. In my view, the real reason that Colin Kaepernick has not been picked up by any team is the owners believe that it would harm their bottom line. Mm. So as a society, we have to send the owners the message that hiring and protecting and retaining players who are perpetrators of domestic violence will result in fewer ticket sales, less memorabilia purchased, more ads pulled, mm-hmm. right? The shaming isn't working. The listening to the lip service of just words alone isn't working. I know it'll be really hard, but fans who care about this issue are going to have to start conditioning their loyalty to a team on the team's ability to meet minimal basic ethical standards.
Deborah, let me get some calls in here. Todd is first in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Todd. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane, Kimberly, Hi. And Deborah. Your initial question was, has the NFL dropped the ball on domestic violence? And the answer to the question is no, they have not. The NFL, between the players and the coaches, has over 2,000 employees that are strongly compliant with the rules and policies of the NFL, including the policies on unnecessary aggression against women. Kareem Hunt was fired upon the proof being presented to the Kansas City Chiefs, and they had nothing from the police department prior to this video that gave them any reason to believe that he was going to be charged or had been charged. Mm-hmm. So they govern themselves correctly.
All right, Todd, thank you. Deborah Epstein, what do you make of what Todd says there? And maybe these are just a few bad apples or not.
I don't think there's any way, looking at the past 4 years, to look at these as a few bad apples. These are just the ones that come to public attention. And when a senior executive on the Washington team tries to excuse their decision to pick up Reuben Foster by calling his three domestic violence arrests, quote, small potatoes, compared to the violence against women perpetrated by those in senior government positions in our federal government. That is extremely telling.
Let me play that sound here. Here is Doug Williams, vice president of the Washington Redskins, on Thursday, saying that linebacker Reuben Foster's arrest for domestic violence was small potatoes compared to other people in, quote, high places. Here is Williams' apology on Friday.
The last night has so been real tough on me from an emotional standpoint, because never in my life that I've said anything so insensitive as, you know, I've said. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses, because there is no excuses.
Deborah Epstein, I know you got to run. How would you describe the culture for players, for their wives within the NFL, after all that you've seen within the Commission on Domestic Violence?
For wives of players, the culture is that the current MO of the NFL is to engage in willful ignorance about its serious problem with violence against women. It is a dangerous place for women to be part. It's a dangerous institution for women to be part of.
Deborah Epstein, professor of law and co-director of the Georgetown Law Center's Domestic Violence Clinic. Deborah, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jane.
Thank you. Joining me now from Washington, Kevin Blackiestone, ESPN panelist and professor of sports journalism at the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland. He also writes sports commentary for The Washington Post. Kevin, great to speak with you again. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Deborah Epstein, you heard her say there, this is willful ignorance. This is a dangerous institution, the NFL is, for players' wives. What's your response to all of this?
Well, I would say one thing, anytime we talk about this particular topic, that this is not an NFL problem. This is a societal problem. Mm-hmm. And that there is no evidence that exists, despite our conversations about it, that underscore that NFL players are any more likely to be criminals or domestic abusers than anyone else. However, they do garner the most headlines, and they have become the faces of domestic violence in this country. And if you believe that sports are somehow the spear in social justice movements in this country, which I would debate, then you become concerned when sports don't appear to be in the forefront of bringing about change and doing the right thing on a critical issue such as domestic violence. And so for that, the NFL has a really big problem.
So you heard Kimberly Martin at the top of the program talking about inconsistency in the policy, in the NFL's policy regarding domestic violence. It really feels arbitrary. What is the NFL's policy today regarding domestic violence?
Well, in the wake of the Ray Rice incident, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, came up with a plan that anyone suspected of domestic violence would be automatically suspended for 6 games. And the NFL would investigate and determine what to do beyond that. And immediately, there was a case with the San Francisco 49ers and a player named Ray McDonald that tested this theory. And Ray McDonald was not handed a 6-game suspension. The 49ers fought it. And ever since then, this policy has been fraught with inconsistencies, almost to the point where it's not a policy at all. And that is the, I think, the big problem that the league has. If you look around the country at employers, maybe even look at NPR, companies will have policies on the books to follow in situations like this. Mm-hmm. And I think we ask in the media, and the public expects, that you follow the policy that you said. And instead, the NFL has not done that.
I thought it was interesting also what Kimberly Martin said about Kareem Hunt and this TMZ video, you know, that if there was no TMZ, Hunt would still be on the Chiefs roster. Is TMZ the new conscience of the NFL? I mean, what's going on here?
It seems to be. It's almost as if the NFL ought to hire TMZ as some sort of investigative unit because they have dropped the ball on this again because they didn't pursue the visual evidence as if they needed visual evidence in this particular case. They knew that something had happened. There was a report. They have an investigative body. They could have gone out and found it, and they could have penalized Kareem Hunt. Then and there. Instead, they let this fish lay on the counter and stink up their entire organization. That is a real problem. And once again, you go back to Roger Goodell, the commissioner, and he has stated that they don't need a criminal conviction in these sorts of situations. All they need to know is that the player has gotten himself in some serious trouble, and they can discipline, penalize the player at that very point.
Let me get some listeners in here. I got a board full of calls. Carlos in White Oaks, New Mexico. Carlos, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks, Jane. Mm-hmm. Excellent topic. Is Kimberly still on the phone with us?
Kimberly is, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to just commend her for her outstanding column. And then to the ESPN analyst, I want to say to him that what's happening is the players have a sense of entitlement that they can get a pass at domestic violence. I'm a police sergeant by vocation, and we have ways of dealing with people that beat up women, and that is called JAIL. That's where they go, first offense.
So what would you like the NFL to do, Carlos? How do we put teeth in this? What do you think?
They need to start doing a permanent ban from the sport. If they want to get really serious about it and go with the Me Too movement, then a permanent ban on the sport is what it's going to take to get their attention. Because right now, these guys feel entitled.
Carlos, thank you. Kevin Blackstone, do you agree? Do you agree about this entitlement piece?
Well, I will just speak to one part of what he said. We do know that there is evidence that bears out that NFL players, sports stars, celebrities are probably two times less likely to be convicted of domestic violence than the rest of us. However, this is, to ban someone from a sport because of a crime that they have committed would be, I believe, a constitutional infringement. Or it would have to be something that would be negotiated into the collective bargaining agreement between the Players Association and the league. And that's not going to happen. I think I would go back to something that Deborah Epstein mentioned, and that's financial pressure brought upon the league. And right now, the league is not feeling any financial pressure from any controversies that that come upon it. Mm-hmm. Since Ray Rice, revenues are up. Since Ray Rice, now this year, ratings are up. Ad revenue is up. The league is doing just fine financially, so why would it change what it's doing simply because of this Kareem Hunt case or the Reuben Foster case?
Kimberly Martin, jump back in here. Talk about this culture of winning at all costs that Kevin Blackstone mentions here within the NFL. How do you see it?
Well, I appreciate that caller reading my column. I think that's the crux of the issue. That's why the Washington Redskins thought with Reuben Foster, okay, he gets released, so we're going to take a chance. We don't know how this is going to play out, whether he's going to be convicted in a court of law or if the NFL will suspend him, but it won't really cost us much to take this gamble. And if nothing bears out, if no punishment bears out, then we have a quality, talented, athletic player who can help us win games. And that, to me, is the problem. When GMs, when owners, when head coaches, executives feel as though we have to do this in order, you know, they justify every action. Well, we're trying to win games. That's the bottom line. And I covered the Washington Redskins for the Washington Post up until August. So I know Doug Williams personally. have a lot of respect for him. Mm-hmm. I know the man. I was really upset with his apology. I was upset with his statement when he first put it out. Mm-hmm. I was upset with the front office for putting Doug out there to take the brunt of all this when the owner, it's a collective decision, and the owner, and up until this Monday night game between the Redskins and the Eagles, you didn't hear from anyone else up until Monday night when Bruce Allen was interviewed.
Kevin
and
Blackiestone,
I have a lot of problems.
Yeah, no, I hear it. Kevin Blackiestone, just a couple of seconds here before the break. It's not just the NFL. It's the self-interest of the teams and the owners and really ultimately the fans, as Deborah Epstein was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think we need to rethink how you penalize teams and penalize the league with these cases going forward, because the way it's done right now is not having an impact.
We're talking about the NFL and domestic violence this hour. Kimberly Martin of Yahoo Sports, Kevin Blackiestone of ESPN. You can join us, listeners. What are you hearing in this conversation? A flawed process? A cover-up? A big national problem playing out in a very public way at the NFL? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Much more after this. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the rash of domestic violence incidents involving NFL players this hour, and you can join the conversation. What is the way forward here? Is forgiveness an option, or should it be zero tolerance? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Kimberly Martin, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, and Kevin Blackiestone, ESPN panelist, sports journalism professor at the University of Maryland and sports commentator for The Washington Post. Here's an interview that aired in October of this year with Fox Sports Fair Game. Former Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice reflected in this interview on how he has changed since his domestic violence incident 4 years ago.
The man I see now is a man that's not afraid. I'm not insecure. I was never comfortable at the top because I always knew once you get to the top, there was always a hard fall.
Rice said in an interview this weekend with the NFL Network that he wants to offer help to Kareem Hunt, try to help Hunt figure out what the underlying problems in his life are. Kevin Blackiestone, you know, that sickening video in 2014 of Ray Rice punching out his then fiancée, dragging her out of the elevator. Was that the tipping point for all this? Was that sort of the beginning, really?
Well, it wasn't necessarily the beginning. Certainly a tipping point in the new NFL that we have. But, you know, these things have popped up over time. I mean, one of the arguably the greatest NFL player of all time, Jim Brown, is also known for being a serial abuser of women. You know, in 1965, at the end of his career, he was charged with sexual assault of an 18-year-old girl. Warren Moon, another Hall of Fame football player in 1995, was investigated for domestic abuse, domestic violence, then against his wife. And that really maybe was a change in all of this, because laws across the nation had changed then about the reporting of domestic violence. And even though Warren Moon's wife at the time, who had called 911, did not want to follow through with the charges. New rules had come about, and the fact that there was a call made forced that incident into the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
So these things have bubbled up, but certainly the Ray Rice situation changed everything.
Let's get Devin in here from Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Devin. Welcome.
Hi, yes. So I'm originally from Baltimore, a huge Ravens fan, and mm-hmm. Ray Rice is actually my favorite player, had his jersey wore it every Sunday. And right after the incident, I threw that jersey away and said I was done with him. And I think we need to start holding fans more accountable for their dedication and their teams.
What do you want the NFL to do, Devin? What do you want the NFL to do on a more systemic level?
So I'm sick and tired of them, you know, wearing pink every year, but not taking action from the beginning and not showing concrete steps of how they're transforming their process, not just from how to handle the incident, but how to prevent it. And until we can see that kind of action, I think I'm kind of tired of them.
Devin, thanks so much. Kimberly Martin, will you jump in here? What do you make of all this, Ray Rice especially?
The only thing that you played a clip of Goodell earlier, and the thing that I agreed with him on is that it's complicated. Just all of this is really complicated.
Is it?
And
complicated?
No. Just how there's just so many layers to all of this. As far as, you know, fans, I agree, fans have a voice. They really do. I have a platform as a columnist at Yahoo Sports. I had a platform as a beat writer covering the NFL. But fans, like you mentioned, Colin Kaepernick is not in the league because it's bad for business. The NFL is a business like any other business out there. And they're affected by the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when the kneel, you know, the NFL was all happy. They felt like we had gotten past the protests during the national anthem. We had moved on from that. We've got record scoring. We've got great competition on the field, quarterback play and all that. Everyone was feeling good. And then you've got domestic violence back in the news. And that's the worst case scenario for the NFL, which it's all about PR. You know, every business cares about bad PR. So when I say it's complicated, it is complicated for fans who love a team, who love this sport, who love this game. But the reality is that a lot of times businesses don't, or executives don't, make changes unless their bottom line is affected.
Kevin Blackstone, do they care about the bad PR? I'm thinking about these NFL players just last spring, a half dozen
sure.
of them that were invited to join NFL teams even as they were facing outstanding court cases based on alleged physical or sexual assault. Exhibit A, Cincinnati Bengals running back Joe Mixon, who's on video punching a woman so hard that, you know, she broke four bones in her face.
Yeah, I mean, I think they care about bad PR, but as I stated before, you know, in 2014, their revenues were $6.7 billion. That was the Ray Rice year. Last year, they were $8.2 billion. So revenues continue to go up. They had a slip in viewership the last couple of years. This year, this season, 2018, all that's behind them. Viewership is up. Ad revenues are up. So there's no reason for them to change their approach to this game. I would suggest a couple of things because I don't think we are so addicted to the game that we're going to continue to push the turnstiles and watch the games. But I would say two things. One, they're going to have to start. There's a good reason to suspend players with pay, and that is because owners will still have to pay for someone who they're not getting any labor out of. Number two, I also think that they should suspend players and not allow those teams to replace those players on the roster. That's mm-hmm. going to make it more difficult on coaches, and that's also going to make it more difficult on teammates that those players have left behind. And so that way, I think you can start to bring some pressure to bear upon the franchises and the league itself.
Let's get Jim in here from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic violence is wrong on every level. And there is not any excuse for, and I'm not going to call them men, but any male to put their hands on a woman. But when has it become the employer's responsibility to apprehend or chastise a employee for a domestic violence? Now, with the Hunt fellow and the Ray Wright situation, that is public violence. And public violence is seen on videos, and if there's a crime, they should be punished through the legal system. Domestic violence is a social issue, not only when it comes to the women who get involved with these men domestically, but also the way these men are brought up.
Jim, thank you. I'm going to jump in here. Kevin Blackiestone, respond.
Well, it is a societal problem. I mean, when Ray Rice happened, I pointed out that there was a CEO of a high-tech company called, I think it was called Radium One, who was seen on a security camera landing 117 blows on his then-fiancée girlfriend. He was able to plea down. Of course, it didn't become a national story. We had Mark Fuller, the Alabama federal judge, and the audio tape of his wife calling for help because he was attacking her. And there were some calls for him to be removed from the federal bench at the time, and they were very slow to come, and it wasn't the national story that Ray Rice was. So, you know, there is as I said, the NFL and NFL players in particular, and black males in particular, have become the face of the domestic violence issue in this country, and we don't pay attention to it in other sectors as much, but that's because sports garner so much attention, and we have this idea that as sports go, so does the rest of society, that we will somehow take a lead from what is done in sports for how we carry on in the rest of our lives. There's some truth to that. And at the end of the day, that bit of truth is why the NFL should do something more maybe than even any other industry in this country, because they can have that kind of an impact.
A lot of listener responses on Facebook. Corey says this is an issue of profits over people. Eva on Twitter says, is it possible to address violence against women in the NFL without addressing the violence of the players, what they experience on the field? And then from our website, let's be honest, the NFL only cares about domestic violence to the extent it is an optics issue. If no video surfaces, no punishment. Back to the phones. Penny in Green Lake, Wisconsin. Hi, Penny. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Kimberly kind of stole my thunder. I find these abuse films outrageous and sickening. And what really bothers me the most is about Colin Kaepernick. He seems to be banned from the NFL for taking a knee. And I don't hear any presidential tweets about this abuse issue.
Penny, thank you. Let's get Gene in here from Clarksville, South Carolina. Hi, Gene. What are your thoughts? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The people wanting the NFL to take action against players that hadn't been convicted seems problematic. I just think that all companies have a moral turpitude clause in their policy manual, and if you get convicted, they'll let you go. I mean, why isn't the NFL the same as every other employer? If once you're convicted and you're proven guilty, take action against the player and let them go. If they're not proven guilty, then they're not guilty. I mean, here in Hartsville, I mean, if you're accused of some moral turpitude, you have to be convicted of it before an employer will take action against you. Why would the NFL be any different?
I get it, Gene. Thank you. Kevin, what about that? You know, allegations and allegation until proven guilty. There should be no action.
Well, that seems easy. And, you know, each individual employer, private employers have a different set of regulations that they abide by. The NFL has its own, and they're wrestling with this issue about domestic violence. As we laid out earlier, in the wake of Ray Rice, the commissioner said it would be an automatic 6-game suspension if any player was found to have been suspected even of domestic violence, and the commissioner has not followed his own guidelines. And that is the other part of this problem, because, you know, as President Obama said at the time when Roger Goodell was unable to follow his own rules, he said, you know, you don't want to be winging it when something like this happens. Because you just create more confusion, and you anger more people, and it means that the women who are with these guys feel unprotected, and that the teams in the league know that they can continue on with their business pretty much unimpeded.
Here's a clip from former New York Giants kicker Josh Brown. This is an interview in February 2017 with ABC News. He's talking about being arrested for domestic violence against his now ex-wife.
What I did was wrong, period. Domestic violence is not just physical abuse. We're talking intimidation and threats, the attempt to control, body language. An abuser is going to abuse to a certain degree to acquire some kind of reaction.
Kevin Blackiestone, I mean, I'm looking at a list here. This is not a one-off problem. There's Josh Brown talking about what he did wrong. I'm looking at Greg Hardy, Adrian Peterson, Ezekiel Elliott, Jonathan Dwyer. I mean, name after name, the list just goes on and on and on.
It does, but it also stops. But I will just point out the problem with Josh Brown and most of those names that you brought up. The problem with Josh Brown is that he was given a one-game suspension, and everybody said, but Roger, you said he would get a six-game suspension
right,
for this thing.
Right.
So then they added on six games. Ezekiel Elliott, his case played out over time. Almost all of those people were handled in different situations, which goes back to what Kimberly was talking about, which is the complexity in this. But the complexity is brought about by the way that the NFL is handling this and ignoring its own rules that it laid out. But I should also point out that this is very similar to the way the other leagues do it. People always embrace the NBA as being some sort of progressive sports organization, yet it doesn't have a hard and fast rule to ignore, like the NFL. Mm-hmm. It, in fact, handles its domestic violence cases on a case-by-case situation.
So, Kimberly Martin, jump back in here as we wrap up. Kevin Blackiestone talked about what to do here. Perhaps suspend players with pay. Suspend them and not allow players to be replaced on the roster. What would you add to that list? What's the answer here?
Yeah, I think the fact that the Redskins were even in a position to put in a claim for Reuben Foster is part of the problem. Once guys have been released from a team, for something like this, you shouldn't be able to just say, okay, well, he's going to come cheap. What I'm interested to see is when the Ray Rice situation happened, he was at the tail end of his career. Kareem Hunt is a young player who's in his prime, like he's about to take off.
Yes.
So what I'm curious to see is what happens to him. At what point does a team feel that he's worth a roster spot?
To be continued for sure. Kimberly Martin, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. Great piece, Kimberly, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Blackiestone, ESPN panelist, sports journalism professor at University of Maryland and Washington Post commentator. Always great to hear your perspective, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jane.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. We're on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Listeners, thanks to you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.